you just heard Maloney's update. And it brings up the question with Josh Rosen saying that he loves to be able to play in a difficult environment and doesn't have a problem with it at all. Just how bad is it in the environment? And right now, for your football fix, where we guarantee you football, Greg Coleman is called in on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. He's a longtime NFL punter, and he's the current sideline analyst with the Minnesota Vikings radio network. And since I haven't been to that new stadium, have you? Have you?
Yes.
You have?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, yeah.
Would you rate it as
beautiful?
They bring it noise-wise?
No doubt about it, yes.
Greg, where do you rank it when you're looking at noise-wise in your travels through the NFL? Is it legit or is it a little overrated?
No, it's not overrated. And Doug, I've been to all of them just like Wolf has, and without question. And this includes Jerry's World down in Dallas.
Greg, how are you doing, my brother?
I'm good, man. You know, all is well. But, you know, this it's not gaudy. It's not over the top. But I think our ownership, the Wolf family, has done a fantastic job in bringing a first-class sports venue. There's not a bad seat in the house, even up in the third deck. Mm. It's a great place to watch a football game. It's an experience. It's not a game.
Yeah.
And young Mr. Rosen said that he welcomes that type of an environment. Be careful about what you ask for. You know, and I tell rookies all the time, rookies are young, dumb, and excited. They're not smart enough to know that they should be a little bit more reserved about what they're asking for when they're going into the, I'm not going to say Lion's Den, but, coming to U.S. Bank Stadium, because it is an environment that's been tough on some longtime all pros, let alone a rookie.
Yeah, Greg, 2-2-1. Not the start that most people expected. I didn't expect you guys to be 2-2-1. Talk a little bit about the start.
It's okay. Nobody's pushing the panic button because Wolf, we were 2-2 at this same point in the season last year. We went on a run. We got some people healthy. The bye came at the right time. You know, you never win a championship in September. So there was no panic. Did we have to work out some things offensively? Yeah, we're still struggling a little bit with some injuries on the offensive line. And now with Ev out, on the defensive line, we had some people banged up. But, you know, it's an opportunity for young players to step up. And that's what a lot of our young guys did last week. Stephen Weatherly on the replacing Everson Griffin or filling in for Everson Griffin. You can't replace an all pro. You can't replace what he brings to this football team. And with Trey Waynes being out in concussion protocol, you had, Mike Hughes and George Aloka and Mackenzie Alexander, all those young guys in the secondary, they stepped up and they made plays. And it was a big part of the win up in Philadelphia on the road.
Greg Coleman spent 12 years in the NFL in the 70s and 80s. He's joining Doug and Wolf to talk Vikings. He's the sideline analyst right now for the Vikings radio network. I don't know. You know, it's only Thursday. You've got three more days of prep before the game. So I don't know how much you've devoted in studying everything that's Cardinals football. But with what you know about the Vikings, Greg, where are you thinking they're attacking? This can be offense or defense. What are you seeing from the Cardinals that you say, boy, that's a Viking strength? Cardinals fans should be pretty worried about that.
Well, it's going to be strength on strength. Their offense, Rosen has a, you know, let's face it, he has a tremendous arm. His arm strength, he can throw. And I say this and I temper this. I just use the arm strength example at this point. He has the arm strength of an Aaron Rodgers. Okay, I'm not calling him Aaron Rodgers. So, Twitter, just slow your roll. That's not what I'm
feeling. You, Greg.
I'm talking about. I'm talking about arm strength, and the kid can throw the ball from 120 to the next. So the deep ball, you're not going to be able to squat on some routes because you'll get a lot of double moves. They got some speed on the outside. Yeah, I know Fitzy is banged up. He's not practicing. Hell, he doesn't have to. Guys, 9 times out of 10, this will be his last game played as a pro in Minnesota. So you think he's going to miss this game? Absolutely not. I mean, so he's going to be geeked. You've got some offensive weapons, from tackle to tackle on offense. You go max protection a lot. So you're going to give him the three to five step drop and even a seven step drop if he needs to. And he's going to take his time because he'll wait on the double moves. And our corners have got to be smart. They can't think about jumping routes. So I think that's a strength of Cardinal offense. On the other side, all I can say is Thielen and Diggs. Much more than that, because Kirk Cousins has done a tremendous job. He's done everything that this organization has asked him to do, coming in from Washington, and some of the throws that he's made in the early part of the season has just been incredible. So I look for that to continue. You know, if you try and jump on those guys, I think Cookie will be back this week in the backfield. So a sustaining running game is always good. And you got Kyle Rudolph on tight end. And don't sleep on Laquon Treadwell, you know, if you choose to double Thielen or Diggs.
Yep.
But this offense is potent. You know, you guys bring it on defense. And it's just going to be a battle. It's going to be an NFC battle to the end.
Talk a little bit about the relationship and the chemistry forming between Kirk Cousins and John DeFilippo, your offensive coordinator.
Well, they were aware of each other. They knew each other when Kirk was in Washington and Flip was in Philly. So they saw the body of work that each brought to the table. Now, working together, you know, after practice, before practice, all of those things, it's been a smooth transition because neither one of those were in purple last year.
Mm-hmm.
So to see the progression that they've made doing mini camps, OTAs, training camp, and now the first quarter of the season, it's just incredible. I think I said at the top of the show, Cousins has done everything that this coaching staff has asked for. You know, he's hung in there. He's taken some tremendous shots delivering the ball, but it's been spot on, right on the money. And I don't think that there's anything that Flip can call that that Kirk will think twice about. Mm. He can execute from anywhere on the field. And you talk about a rocket arm. You know, sometimes I catch him, you know, doing warm-ups and all that kind of stuff. I got to get a pair of gloves because the last time I caught a quarterback that threw that hard was Brett Favre. Wow. And, you know, I am seeing that he has the arm strength of Favre, some of the moves and all of those things. So he's a complete quarterback, and I'm glad he's in purple.
My big takeaway from our Greg Coleman conversation here today is just how ugly it would get if our sideline reporter, Paul Calvisi, was catching footballs from the quarterbacks, because Paul would lose his nose when it went right through his through his hands.
Well, hey Wolf, I tell him all the time, I got the best pair of hands in the National Football League. And I had an argument with Bud Grant about that very same thing, you know, when I started to hold PATs and extra points.
Right.
He said, well, look at the size of your hands. You can't catch. I said, listen, if I missed as many balls as your receivers dropped, I'd be out of business. I got to have great hands, man. So I've never dropped them. So, you know,
Something
it's not
tells
a worry,
me Bud
you know?
Did not take that well. I'm just guessing.
But he just kind of looked at me. You know, he knows that punters are strange, especially this one. So, you know, it worked out. But it worked out.
Hey, Greg, thank you so much, buddy. I'll hunt you up come Sunday, okay?
All right, man. I look forward to it, Wolf. Take care, brother.
All right,
absolutely.
Brother.
There's Greg Coleman, Viking sideline analyst, joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. You can go to CoulterTempe.com, CoulterNissan.com, or CoulterOnCamelback.com for your next new or pre-owned car. Coming up next, somebody in the Valley has said, if it doesn't get better, I'll quit. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Talk about getting your guys' attention. I think it works out very well. The comments of Danny Gonzalez, the defensive coordinator of Arizona State, were pretty shocking yesterday, in which he's talking about his defense, and he overall gave him a C, saying, hey, we're 3-3. We got to do better, so we just get a C. 3-3 is average. He only looked at wins and losses, and then was talking about getting better. And he says, just so you know,
in my opinion, we're still not very good on defense. We're good enough to be in games. That ain't good enough. Over the next 2 years, we'll be really good on defense, or I'll quit. Promise. We will be really good on defense, or I won't be here.
I know you got a lot to say about this. Go ahead and say it, because I'm struck by something else.
Okay, I would just say I'm shocked at that, and you'll really find out quickly how much or how little he's respected in the room.
Yes,
how his players feel about him, because that is the kind of statement that I think a kid just resonates. Now, granted, kids don't know about a job. They don't know about the family. They don't know really what you've said of putting your career on the line for them and what that would mean if you lose your job. But I do think for somebody to say something that strong, he can go right to his players and say, see, I believe in you that much.
Yeah.
But you got to start getting this. And I think that is something that would motivate young kids. But I'm floored by it, because the media guy in me is thinking, I'm going to remember that. And in 2020, we're all going to be looking, where's your defense?
Yeah, for the most part, listen, I get it. I don't even know if Danny Gonzalez is going to be here in 2 years, based on earnings, because he's already a name where people are whispering about, you know what, if they have any success whatsoever this year and next year, you know what, honestly, 2 years from now, who knows if Danny Gonzalez is going to be here or he's going to be a head coach somewhere else. This guy, from all accounts, is head coaching material right here. So, you know, I'm not really struck by that when I listen to Danny Gonzalez say that. I mean, it's a gutsy thing to say. There's no doubt about it. Hey, listen, we're going to be good, but I think he sees the raw material that he has in front of him and can project that raw material 2 years down the road. Having said that, what I was struck by was the fact that, you know what, we're not very good right now. We're good enough to be in games for the most part. What he meant is we're not good enough to finish. It's one thing to be competitive, Basinonians, and it's another thing to be able to finish the deal. And when you think of games that have been played, I think of San Diego State, I think of Washington, I think of Colorado, right? They lost all of those games by a touchdown, and I don't think they finished.
Is that a positive or a negative? Obviously, losing is a negative, but you know that they have not been blown out. And
it's a positive. How, again, you know what? Look, we talk about moral victories all the time, but how in the world, when you've got a struggling program, a program that has gone through a paradigm shift the way ASU has gone through, not just by hiring Herm Edwards, but the entire front office, so to speak, of the, not the program, ladies and gentlemen, the organization has totally changed. Knowing that, you're seeing real results on the field of a competitive football program.
I asked you that question so you hear this. They are 3-3. No game this weekend, but you'll be able to hear them on ESPN 620 AM coming up next Thursday. Okay, a week from today, they're at home against Stanford. And guess what Manny Wilkins told us that I don't know if a lot of people knew about?
I had a player-led meeting a few days ago, and I let our team know that we got to look at this as such a good thing, that three games, there hasn't been no blowout, no anything. Combined, the three games, we've lost by 21 points. So if we score four more touchdowns throughout this season, you know, and we win all of those games, right? Now everybody's talking to us about, you know, playoff and all this stuff. Four touchdowns, that's it. That's how little it is. So I just wanted to let our guys know, man, we just got to continue to focus on the little things. And we have to step up, and we need to make the plays that make the difference in those games at the end. So that's on us. That's on us to make that happen.
It sounds so close, but as Manny knows, you're yet so far. You really are. I four touchdowns, I get it. His point is well made. But it's about not finishing in three games. It's about not finishing in three different games. And that really is a collective effort as well. That's special teams, that's defense, and that's offense all together. Finishing, that's what they've got to do. You hear Herm Edwards talk about it all the time. He's got to get this team to finish what you started, finish what you do. All the way through, right? It's the reason why we here on the Doug and Wolf Show flash the one, the two, the three, and the four.
That's tomorrow.
That's what we do, because you never know. It's a consistent effort that you have to give through all four quarters. You want to win, but you got to learn how to finish more than anything else. And I love the fact, too, that he had a players-only meeting. Because you know what? At the college level, I think they actually work. I think that's not bad. At the pro level, it's just never a good thing. Never a good thing. But at the college level, I think that could work.
It is, quote-unquote, the bye week, even though they don't have a full week next week with the game on Thursday against Stanford. But Herm Edwards let us know he's looking inside.
I think it's good for me to self-reflect. I haven't coached in a while. As far as a team, I was a coach in America. Didn't have my own team. With that being said, it's helped me to look at some things that hopefully I can improve on as a football coach. How I can connect better with my players, make them understand the importance of the details of what we're requiring them to do.
Man, I just listened to Herm Edwards talk, ladies and gentlemen, and all I can think of is him sitting in a living room somewhere in Southern California. Just, listen, you know what? Trust me. You come here, I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to take care of your kid. I mean, honestly, I love everything Herm Edwards says. I love listening to Herm. I love his delivery. I love how he goes about his business. And yet, that's great. He's going to self-evaluate. Herm's always going to look at himself first. Herm is always going to do that because that's who he was as a player and that's who he was as a coach. He's always going to be accountable and he's going to look at himself first. And having said that right there, he's going to get better.
When you're a 3-3 football team and you've lost three games by one score, you got to ask yourself, well, why did that happen? How can we prevent that from happening again and win some of those games? And you have to look at everything you do. Now, with that being said, I think the players have to buy into that as well.
Finish. That's what they have to do. Finish. When it gets thick, right? When the pressure is up and the dial's turned up, how do you respond then? That is always the question. It's the question in life. It's not just a football game. It's not just a baseball game. It's not just a basketball game, a hockey. It's not just that. It's in life. When it gets nasty, my brothers, when it gets thick out there, how do you respond to that? There's a lot of us that run and hide. Some of us don't. But it's the question nonetheless.
Have you subscribed to the Doug and Wolf podcast? Subscribe right now on your iPhone or Android and you'll never miss any of the show. It's the Doug and Wolf podcast that's brought to you this week by PhoenixHousePainting.com. Coming up next, if you look at the Cardinals defense and they're staring across the line of scrimmage and they see Diggs, Thielen, Cousins, how does the Cardinals stack up? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Time to take a look at the Arizona Sports Poll Question. Brought to you by Sanderson Ford. The best play is at Sanderson Ford.
Bear is dancing, Maloney is speaking. What is today's poll question?
Which linebacker should the Cardinals start alongside Josh Bynes? So you guys have the options of Deon Buchanan and Hassan Reddick. What do you guys think?
Wow. Obviously, we're going with the two linebackers, and can I be crazy and say I'd like another option, and it'd be, can we go with three linebackers every now and then? Can we, like, in the 4-3 actually have the 4-3? Is that obnoxious? I realize that Maloney is going, Doug, just answer the question.
Yes.
But I would like to see three linebackers in the 4-3 sometime.
So Doug doesn't just want to change the question. He wants to change the scheme altogether.
Yes, there you go.
Okay.
Well, you know, the Minnesota Vikings, Basinonians, when the Arizona Cardinals go two back, and they will this weekend, the Minnesota Vikings will get into a true 4-3 defense.
They'll say, this is who we are. You deal with it.
With three linebackers. Yeah. Interesting.
Well, Gerald Hodges, when he's been in there, I know he's not the future. He's decisive. He reads and he reacts and he hits the right gap and he's disruptive. So if you're going to do that and you want the most effective guy right now, it's probably Gerald Hodges.
One of the things about the Minnesota Vikings offense, though, it's really interesting, ladies and gentlemen. They don't run the ball well in between the tackles. They do not. As a matter of fact, their offensive line gets stuffed a lot. And we've seen that right here in the basin, have we not? They like to attack the perimeters. That's what they do. And they do it out of shotgun a lot as well. They like to throw the ball on the perimeter as well. Wide receiver screens, right? They like the speed, the jet sweep. They like the stretch out of shotgun where the running back comes across all the way from the other side to run the stretch. They like to attack the perimeter, and we're going to see that a lot.
The results of the poll are pretty much split. 51% in favor of Deion Buchanan, 49% in favor of Hassan Reddick. But it's funny with what you're talking about, Wolf, maybe in the San Francisco game, but for the most part, when have we seen the Arizona Cardinals defense set an edge and say you're not running to the outside, and we're going to stop it? Because it seems like anytime somebody's running to the edge, it's either I'm going to run right around, or if there's actually a little bit of penetration from a defensive end, there's a huge gap between him and the tackle to run through, and you can just cut to the outside even faster. It has not been an edge setting except for, I think, the San Francisco 49er game. So if you're saying the Vikings are good at that, I almost feel like that's all they need to be good at against this Cardinals defense.
There's been one constant this season, and that's the Monday film session with Steve Wilks and Al Holcomb showing the defense who's out of their gap.
Mm.
You know, last week it was, hey, there was a tackle for loss followed by a 17-yard run. Mm-hmm. Just the utter inconsistency on a defense that's predicated on guys being in the right gaps at the right time. And if you're not, then there's going to be a massive hole, and we've seen that, whether it's been inside, whether it's been outside. And that's the battle. You have the 31st ranked rushing offense, the Minnesota Vikings, against the 31st ranked rush defense in the Arizona Cardinals. How is that going to fare on Sunday?
Yeah, it really is. Again, you watch the offensive line, and I'm not impressed with their offensive line. I'm not impressed, Basin audience. All right? I'm not. Just watching them try to run the ball and watching them actually try to protect Kirk Cousins as well. Kirk Cousins seems to be under duress. Now, they're right in the middle of the pack. I think literally 16. Yeah, 16 in terms of sacks per attempt allowed. Okay, but when you watch the tape, you see Kirk Cousins getting knocked around a little bit, right? You see him getting knocked around. He's under duress many times, moving out of the pocket, extending the play. Their right tackle is a guy that totally struggles. But I think their offensive line overall struggles from time to time. I think it's the weakness of the Minnesota Vikings.
But their passing game has connected. I mean,
four
straight games of 30 completions or more, the first quarterback in NFL history to do that? That's hard to believe.
Number three in the league, Paul.
And those two receivers, and you heard the sideline guy sort of beat his chest there, right? Your guy from Minnesota, he's like, hey, hello with Diggs and Thielen. You guys got to deal with that. I mean, that's a major difference than the 49ers a week ago.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you got two top-flight receivers right now. I'm guessing Patrick Peterson will be on Diggs, and then you got to deal with Thielen on the other side.
That's what Paul's referring to, if you didn't hear it. Greg Coleman, who's the sideline analyst for the Minnesota Vikings, let us know two things. Number one, that he warms up the quarterbacks and catches balls from them, something that for some reason the Cardinals sideline reporter doesn't get involved in.
Well, you know, Pete Carroll does that as well, the head coach of
the
Seahawks.
Yeah, and then number two, exactly what you said, Paul.
All I can say is Thielen and Diggs.
Oh!
Have to say any, you know, much more than that, because Kirk Cousins has done a tremendous job. He's done everything that this organization has asked him to do, coming in from Washington, and some of the throws that he's made in the early part of the season has just been incredible.
Yeah, but once again, if Rashad Hill doesn't actually do his job at right tackle, he's in trouble. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, Chandler Jones, it'd be a great game to put together another game like you did last week.
Absolutely, Paulie. The edge in this game is going to be critical because, again, Minnesota does run the ball and they attack the perimeter on defenses. And we know that's been a problem with the Cardinals from time to time, and also just getting pressure on the quarterback right now. I would imagine we're going to see Chandler Jones rush from the left defensive end position more than what we've seen in the past. That's just a guess. You got Riley Reiff over at left tackle. He's a little nicked up, a little banged up right now.
Missed practice with the foot.
A little nicked up right here, but I think he's going to play. I would have guessed he's going to play.
Speaking of that, nicked up, Paul, you be our injury update guy. How's Marcus Golden?
He practiced yesterday.
Yeah.
He did go yesterday. So I'm presuming that bodes well for Sunday. Presuming. Don't know for sure. The other thing I got out of the locker room yesterday was Kyle Rudolph. You know, not only do they have the two top flight receivers, but you better be very aware of Kyle Rudolph down the seams.
He's their third leading receiver, as a matter of fact, right?
So.
But again, Stephon Diggs, I've talked about this right here. He's got the best double move I think I've ever seen. A takeoff move where he literally runs about 10 yards down the field and then he stutters with this dead leg. I want to call it this dead leg stutter where it looks like he's breaking down to run a four route or an in route. And then all of a sudden, boom, takes off. I was like, whoa, man, I hope we're not in man. I hope we're not.
Didn't they get to the NFC Championship game? Moment?
I'm telling you right now, he's got the best takeoff I have seen on film.
The other thing about our Greg Coleman conversation, this is starting to become This is starting to become too much of a trend. Everybody says 900 qualifiers. Don't tweet me. Don't at me. Don't say Canton, Ohio. But there's one name people keep saying over and over again when they talk about Josh Rosen.
Rosen has a, you know, let's face it, he has a tremendous arm. His arm strength, he can throw. And I say this and I temper this. I just use the arm strength example at this point. He has the arm strength of an Aaron Rodgers. Okay, I'm not calling him Aaron Rodgers. So, you know, Twitter, you know, just slow your roll. That's not what I'm
feeling
saying.
You, Greg.
I'm talking about. I'm talking about arm strength.
But, I mean, more and more people are making the Aaron Rodgers comparison.
The more and more I see him, the less I see Aaron Rodgers, though. Honestly, I think I'm more apt to think somewhere across between an Andrew Luck and a Peyton Manning. I mean, if you want to go really high-level, potential Hall of Fame guys, I'm not sure I see as much Aaron Rodgers because you just don't see the athleticism roll out. I mean, at times you do, but not to that degree. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't sling it in the same manner as an Aaron Rodgers. Does he have a strong arm? Absolutely. Even yesterday at the press conference, he said, I trust my arm talent. He's very confident in his arm. I'm just not sure it doesn't remind me a whole bunch of the style of an Aaron Rodgers.
I like the comparison from a mobility standpoint of being able to keep a play going longer. I'll run if I have to. That athleticism, but then it doesn't seem like it's still shot out of a cannon after he starts moving like you see with Aaron Rodgers.
No, Aaron Rodgers is the only man on the planet who can make certain throws. Yeah. He is Rocket Man.
I mean, now, from the field level, there have only been a handful of guys where I said, wow, look at the arm of that guy. Aaron Rodgers and Jay Cutler recently was that guy. I mean, just
really?
An absolute cannon.
No doubt.
Luckily, Josh Rosen has this in his favor is that he won't be held back from his education. Like, imagine what Aaron Rodgers could have done if he went somewhere else.
Okay. How are you guys doing on that, by the way? Hating on NorCal quarterbacks, Jared Goff and Aaron Rodgers.
Rises.
How are you guys doing on that one
Does
right
it
there?
Not, Jared?
Yeah, keep buying that losing stock. Go ahead.
Join Bickley and Murata and Burns and Gambo today. They take their shows on the road to Four Peaks and Tempe. Come have a pint and prep for Oktoberfest happening at Tempe Beach Park this weekend as we give away tickets to upcoming games and VIP tickets to Oktoberfest. Visit the events page at arizonasports.com for details.
Keep shorting that stock, gentlemen. There goes your 401k.
He didn't know it rose in the West.
Coming up next, should the Suns go after Jimmy Butler? And what do they teach him at Marquette? Does he know where the sun comes up?
Oh, that's real good right there, Jared.
That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
The East? Oh! Are you talking to me? Jimmy Butler! Yeah, Jimmy! Respect the Suns. Respect people talking about you becoming a Phoenix Sun. That's a 0.25% chance. Yeah, Jimmy.
Your Pantera call-out is driven by AutoNation. With 13 dealerships in the Valley and over 100,000 new and pre-owned vehicles on AutoNation.com, find what you're looking for today. It's only I would say, fan speculation. I've heard a lot of media speculation. I've heard a lot of people that I trust in the industry saying, yes, there's a chance the Suns could be involved in a Jimmy Butler trade. But it's always as the third party because the T-Wolves want more from the Heat to get a deal done. And then the question becomes, all right, is it Goran Dragic coming to the Phoenix Suns? Mm-hmm. I have only heard from fans saying, well, if we're involved in the Jimmy Butler trade talks, why don't we just talk about Jimmy Butler and just go straight to Minnesota and go get Jimmy Butler? So I'm not reporting anything, but I would say, I'm going to say,
I'd love it if he became a Phoenix Sun.
Don't sell it as an impossibility from the desperation standpoint. Because if you believe, and maybe some of you don't, and that's fine, because you know Robert Sarver says it's not true, but if you believe the Adrian Wojnarowskis of the world that are reporting from other general managers, they could hear Robert Sarver yelling in the background of conference calls. Okay?
Why did you go there?
If you believe that Robert Sarver, according to Charles Barkley, is one of the most meddling owners in the NBA, if you believe the reports of just how in the way Robert Sarver is, then move all of that, your beliefs, into this filter for a second. Wouldn't a great way to prove those people wrong, or that Ryan McDonough wasn't good, or you were justified in firing Ryan McDonough, would be to go get Jimmy Butler?
Yes.
I mean,
but again, at what cost?
That's the thing, though. To me, I think Robert Sarver, here's what I believe happened.
It's always about it.
It's always speculation, but what I believe happened is the final straw was more about Ryan McDonough not producing the point guard, that it sounded like in the Burns and Gambo conversation that Robert Sarver had, that it was like, here are the benchmarks I want to see and I'm not seeing them.
Yeah.
And I bet Ryan McDonough is saying, we've worked so hard to build up these assets, I'm not giving such and such away. Yes. I'm not giving this away. I don't care about the price. I'll even start October without a point guard. I am not giving away such and such. And then here's Robert. You said I was going to have a point guard. Fine. Listen, I'm not making this trade. If you want to make the trade, go right ahead. And I'm not going to sit up at some press conference while you are sitting right there.
Your mother was a hamster and your father stunk of elderberries.
And I don't think anybody said elderberries. And then finally it was like, okay, you're fired.
You're fired.
And once we got to elderberries, you know it's always over. So once this happened, then now what do? You want to go prove you could go get that guy. A great way to do it is to get Jimmy Butler and to say, see, look what we did.
Yes. But you know what? Honestly, I don't know what happened. I really don't, based on Eanes. And honestly, at this point in time, I'm done trying to determine what happened. What I do know is this. The Phoenix Suns are going forward, and I think they need a little bit of order. Over the last couple of days, a lot of talk has been going on about James Jones becoming the full-time general manager. I don't know. To me, I think stability, one of the biggest problems I have with the fact that Ryan McDonough was fired 9 days before the season opener, it created instability. It does.
Mm-hmm.
It is, listen, we all don't operate in a vacuum, do you, Basinonians? Whatever you do, whatever your hand finds to do, you don't operate in a vacuum.
It affects everybody.
It affects everybody around you. Your behavior, the things you do, the things you say, Basinonians, it impacts all those around you. And this is no different, and that's my problem with it. It screams instability, volatility, as opposed to, we're under control. We've got a good foundation. This is where we're going. Okay, I mean, if you wanted to fire Ryan McDonough before the offseason, I get that. If you wanted to fire Ryan McDonough at some point in time, you could build a case both ways. And you've well documented this, Doug Lees. You could do it both ways. You could say, yes, he deserved to be fired, or no, he deserved another year. You could build a case both ways. But if you wanted to do it, I understand that. Do it. Still do it 9 days before the season opener, because to me, it screams instability.
Research and Doug. Research and Doug.
What we try to do is we make you feel good about stats in life that can tell you a story you didn't see coming. Ron Wolfley, do you believe the Cardinals are going to the Super Bowl?
No.
Okay. Maloney?
the Cardinals sacked C.J. Beathard four times and forced five turnovers. The last time the Cardinals had five takeaways and four sacks in a game, they went to the Super Bowl that year.
Oh, boy.
How about this coincidence? Game one of the year, 2008, it was in San Francisco. So the last two times the Cardinals have ever had five takeaways and four sacks, both games were in San Francisco.
Wow, that is incredible.
Yeah.
Now that is incredible.
And 2008, it started off 2008, and we never thought they would be going to the Super Bowl, but they did.
They're going to need the exact same kind of performance from their defense and the edge in particular as they got against the 49ers if they want to be in the game in the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
The Redskins are in first place at 2-2, and Pittsburgh is in last place at 2-2-1.
Okay.
That doesn't grab you? That grabs
me. It doesn't grab me at all.
It grabs you because you're a Redskins fan.
No, it grabs me because the NFC East is that horrible.
I just wanted to highlight the fact the Redskins were in first place.
The NFC East is that horrible that they're sitting at 2-2, and that's good enough for first place. Yet, almost the same record for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and that's in last place. Because right now, the NFC East is something like 6-11 outside the division. Meaning the Eagles can still screw around and win the division, no matter how bad that they're playing right now.
Since the 2015 draft, David Johnson has the most multi-touchdown games in the NFL.
Wow. Really?
Think about all the games he missed last year.
Oh, my goodness. That is incredible. And once again, just the fact through five games this season already. That's a stunning fact. I never would have guessed that.
He's got...
You're not talking about just running backs, are you?
You're talking about all players.
Oh, my goodness.
Since the 2015 draft, he's got the most multi-touchdown games. He's at 12.
Wow.
With Todd Gurley at 11. And just to prove how shocking it is, Antonio Brown is third with 9. So David Johnson scored multiple touchdowns in a game more often than Antonio Brown and Todd Gurley. And remember, it's a stat not based on games played, just since the draft. So all of last year still counts.
That's incredible.
Wolf, do you remember what you were doing on December 24th, 2006?
Let me think about it. Christmas Eve, 2006. Yeah, I was calling a game.
No way! How did you remember?
Where were you calling your game?
Here?
No.
No.
No, okay.
You were in San Francisco.
Okay, there you go.
The last time a rookie Cardinals quarterback won a road game was also in San Francisco. And it was 9 days before the first Doug and Wolf show as Matt Leinart won on Christmas Eve.
No! No! Was it really that long ago?
It's the last time a Cardinals rookie quarterback won a road game. Both games in San Francisco. The Doug and Wolf show wasn't even around then.
Matt Leinart. Sub-Zero.
Did you call him Sub-Zero? That's a long story for another day. Coming up next, Cardinals. Good job, Maloney. Those were good. Cardinals, Vikings, Thursday night football. Oh, both topics. With Max Starks, next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Your mother was a hamster, and your father smelt of elderberries.